When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Hey, it's me, Jersey, and it's time for your Thunder Punch Daily, the show I record not so daily, sharing a few thoughts from the mind of a cartoonist. Back to the car recording for today's episode. And it's a long story as to why. But to summarize briefly, I do want to go back to doing more of these car recordings. One, because it sure beats sitting in a car for 10 minutes and just browsing Twitter or checking my email. More productive use of my time. And two is, after all, for those who are new to Thunder Punch Daily, I record these car recordings on a program called Hindenburg Mobile, which is an iPhone app I got. It's the most expensive app I've ever bought. It was $30. But what it allows me to do is I can actually record the episode, edit together the music intros and outros, and export it to my web server all from the phone. So I don't do anything really to it in on my computer outside of touching it once to change a file name. So in any case, it seems foolish of me to let all that money go to waste when I got this really powerful tool in my pocket. Anyway, so what am I thinking about today? Well, I've been muttering about this here and there on some of the art and stories. It's something I've been coming up against a lot lately with students and with some other people in my life who shall remain nameless. I don't think you guys know them, but just to be polite, because I'm not going to make fun of them or anything. It's just that I'm going to point out a behavior that I've noticed that I think is actually a little misguided and borderline destructive towards a creative career. And that is the sense of trying to make something perfect, the sense of the struggle for perfection, and letting that struggle for perfection stop you from creating. Okay, let's start with my students. This, you know, they get a pass because they are kids after all, and you know, 15, 14, sometimes as old as 18, but they're just starting out. You know, they're really, really new to this thing, and it's understandable that they don't have the experience yet to understand that learning is a lifelong process. Especially when you're like 16, 17, you're in such a rush to adulthood to get all of the advantages of adulthood. We've all been there. We know what it's like. And then you get to adulthood and you go, hey, this is great. I get to drive my own car. I have my own house. But oh, no, now I got bills. Now I got health problems. Now I have all these other downsides that come with the picture. But when you're 16, you don't care about it. You're not even thinking about that. And so I think that that's part of the mindset that informs the sense of you want the work that you share with others, share as input on the internet, publish in a mini comic, show to your friends. You want it to be perfect. And that's a good thing. It comes from a good feeling. It comes from a good motivation, because you want to do good work and you want to make your readers happy. That's good. But where it gets bad is when you are so focused on that ultimate reception of the work that it stops you from doing the work in the first place. Oh, it needs a little bit more work here. It needs another tweak there. I know I went into this in a recent art and story, but I'm going to build this point out with like another subtle shade to it that I think a lot's changed in the 21st century in the world of the internet that makes this sort of idea of struggling for perfection all the more pointless and futile. But I also see this in creators who are looking to define themselves. They want to have a definitive look or style, or there's like this work represents me now. Okay, again, this comes from a good place. This comes from a sense of a motivation to be professional, to have a sort of a narrative to your body of work so that people can form an estimation of who you are as a creator and what they can expect from you. If you are a contract or independent or freelance illustrator or storyteller, this is crucial. You need to be able to have an elevator pitch for what kind of stories you do. So that's all very good. However, I do think it's destructive because it can be destructive. When you let that search for the definition of yourself stop you from experiencing creativity in the spirit of play, you just because you have a sort of style that you would like to be associated with, that shouldn't prevent you from experimentation and having a sense of playfulness about your work and sharing the playful stuff. I don't think I have yet to see it negatively affect my career. You know, like when I share little sketches of He-Man characters on my website or do stylistic experimentations like the Boulder and Fleet mini comic that I put up at comicsaregreat.com/blog. This is interesting to people to see. It's funny. I'm curating two art exhibits in the lead up to Kids Read Comics this year. And in both galleries, we are hanging comics art, but we're also encouraging the participating artists to put the process work up next to it. So the thumbnails, the pencil sketches, any kind of like stream of consciousness notes on post-its that they did, any ideas that are on paper that went into making that final page are going to surround the piece that's hung on the wall. Now, that's interesting to us as being enthusiasts of the comics medium, but the gallery people were getting super excited about this. They're like, oh, our customers, our patrons, our traditional art buyers love seeing process stuff. I've said this a million times. You get a DVD, you check out the audio commentary from the director. If it's from somebody who is interesting in the creative arts involved in it, I really couldn't care any less about hearing Tobey Maguire talk about his experience playing Spider-Man, because he's just an actor after all, and actors are great and everything, but he didn't write the script, he didn't do the sound design, he didn't direct it, you know? But anyway, that's an asterisk on the thing. But anyway, the point is that people genuinely enjoy process when it's presented in a nice way, in a fun and engaging way. So taking that idea, what is the harm of doing experimentation and sharing your experimentation? It doesn't affect your definitive work, in my opinion. It just gives you even a broader appeal to more people. And the people who like your experimentation work better, now you just created a new audience for yourself. And if it's really like a sense of like, oh, I don't want it to affect to muddy my portfolio. Well, that's fine. I assume most of you who are pursuing a freelance career or have a freelance career have a portfolio site as I do, jdrows.net, where I put the quote unquote definitive pieces or the pieces where I worked for high profile clients. And I want to share that, you know, just to give myself a little bit of like a social bump, you know, saying, oh, he worked for so-and-so. But that's where I put the work that I define myself by. And I don't put my experimentations there. I put those on my blog. I share those. And what's more is I'm going to print up the Boulder and Fleet mini comic as a mini comic. And I'm going to sell it at shows, providing I can get to any shows this year. But it doesn't hurt your definition of yourself. And what's more is, here's where I get to my final point. This is the sort of the overarching crowning point that I was building towards with these smaller ideas. Is I'm beginning to suspect that the definition of yourself, the definitive work of yourself, is kind of an old 20th century outmoded concept in the wake of the internet. It's trying to freeze yourself in time. Is trying to say that it's like something that, gosh, we talked about this in Art and Story a long time ago. This idea of waking up one morning and deciding, well, I'm a Republican, I don't have to think about things anymore, or I'm a Democrat, I don't have to think about things anymore. Just finding some kind of label to put on yourself so that you don't have to struggle with every decision that you make in life. And those of us who are good of heart and, are sophisticated of nature know that that doesn't happen and that it's always a struggle and you're always just winging it and always faking it as best you can through life. And so too is it with the arts. And trying to find a definitive you in your arts is trying to sort of freeze you in ice to say, okay, now that's all you ever need to know about me. You don't have to think about it anymore. Everything I make is going to follow that definition. I know that the people who are pursuing a definitive piece in their career, I know they really don't want that, because I think, again, I think that finding the definitive work comes from a good motivation. But ruthlessly pursuing that, or feeling angst over experimentation and trying out new things for fear of it harming your quote-unquote definitive body of work, I think is a negative thing, and I think it is potentially destructive. And here's how the internet exemplified this for me. I may have shared this story recently on Art and Story 2, but it's worth repeating. So I'm in class, I'm teaching a bunch of 13, 14-year-olds, and I instituted a game where I do little 5-minute ink sketches of requests from the classroom that I put up for prizes at the end of class. Like, whoever finishes two pages of Comic Sequentials today, you'll be entered in a drawing for one of these really awesome little ink sketches that I did. It's bribery, yeah, but it's fun for the kids and it's fun for me. I get to draw, and the kids get to get something cool at the end of the class besides the satisfaction of drawing for themselves. And one of my students says to me, could you draw a Cobra Commander for one of them? And this kid's, what, 13, 14 years old? I'm assuming he's talking about the Cobra Commander from the new G.I. Joe motion picture, which is, he's got like this kind of see-through plastic mask with tubes all over it. It looks very Star Wars and kind of stupid to me. But, you know, I pull up my phone and try to look up an image. And he says, oh, no, I don't want that one. I want the real one. And I said, well, what do you mean? What do you mean was the real Cobra Commander? He says, oh, it's the one with the blue helmet and the silver face. In other words, the 1983 Cobra Commander from the cartoon. And I turned to him and I said, how do you know who that Cobra Commander is? Like, what, did your dad introduce you to him or something? He said, no, I watched it on YouTube. And as I've talked to these kids more, I realize that there is no definitive hot show or style or, you know, some intellectual property that all these kids are gathering around. Just as we've been talking about and as other people have been talking about on other shows like This Week in Media, take a drink, haven't mentioned them in a while. We're entering the age where there's going to be no more mega superstars, but a bunch of little minor stars. These kids are huge. They get all their content from YouTube, and they get all their recommendations from friends. And so, yeah, they're familiar with things like Angry Orange or Fred, some of these big YouTube hits. But they also are watching cartoons from all different time periods, and it's not even, it doesn't even occur to them that, oh, this is old, it's not for me. You know, going back to when I was a kid, you know, things quickly became outdated. I mean, when I glommed onto the G.I. Joe cartoon, I was like, I'm done with you, Star Wars. I've forgotten completely about you. I love G.I. Joe now. And that's just how it worked. Like, whatever was old was no good, and you were always looking forward to the new thing. Well, to these kids, with the internet containing all media of all times, man, this is like what Patton Oswalt was talking about in that essay that he did on Wired Magazine a while back, but he was talking about it from the opposite point of view, is they have access to everything, so there is no one definitive version of anything, especially in arts that are iterative, like G.I. Joe, like these storytelling franchises, like Marvel Comics, DC Comics, Hasbro Entertainment, etc. So if there's no definitive one and the kids get to decide for themselves which one they like, then can't they do that with your work too? Has that removed the option for the artist to decide what is the definitive work, because you're going to have a fragmented audience base who all like different parts of what you do if you try out a lot of different things? So this really flies in the face of sort of a foregone conclusion by a lot of webcomicers that you have to create a one webcomic that you are known for, and your name is synonymous with the title of that webcomic, and that is your brand, and that is how you market yourself, and that's how you build a giant constituency that you can monetize through advertisements or subscriptions or book sales or convention appearance, etc. But if there is no definitive version of your work, and there's some kids who like the older stuff better, some kids like the new stuff better, well, I guess if all you've ever done is one comic, then you sort of have forced the world into associating a definitive work of yours because you haven't done anything else. But if you're a guy like me who likes to play around with a lot of different things, then what this has all led me to wonder about is putting everything I've ever done online. I mean, going all the way back to 1994, just scanning all that work and putting it all online and letting the world decide what's good and what's not. That's for them to decide, not me. Yes, I am the artist. I get to decide what I like. I get to decide what stories I tell. But as far as what the audience says, if I've often given advice that you should create without thinking about the audience, then you should disseminate without thinking about the audience. And if they decide that they love my stuff from 1996 better, then I'll try to find a way to monetize that. If they decide it's crap, that's fine too. But the point of what I'm trying to drive at here is that I think we're standing in a really interesting turning point in the way media works, in that we don't have to have this constant pipeline of the one definitive thing with just new little subtle tweaks to it. We have a lot more latitude now to be playful and to experiment and try out a lot of different styles. And actually, maybe this is where I should have built this point to, is that we've been afforded the opportunity to play around with a lot of different styles and discover new things about our work. And no, I'm not saying that everybody has to do this, but it's become, in my opinion, especially advantageous to do this, because we're entering a time where a growing group of people are not thinking of, not looking at the publishing date on something to decide if it's worth looking at. They're just deciding based on whether or not they like it. That's interesting. So I hope this all sticks together somehow. It does in my head anyway, is that I think that that this turning point in the way media works is an extra call to arms to say, stop trying to make it perfect. Keep going at it in the spirit of play. Stop trying to find that definitive work if this is something you've been struggling with, and be playful and play around with more different styles and more different kinds of approaches to your work. You'll have more fun. And I think you'll find that you're going to build a larger audience of diverse groups of people, which I think most of us would like. Okay, so who am I? I'm Jersey Droz, jdroz.com, Jersey on the Twitters. Thanks very much for supporting us in this project. We really couldn't do it without you. Another call to action to you guys. I just want to remind everybody who is in the Southeast Michigan area about the Kids Read Comics Extravaganza coming up in a couple weeks, March 12th, Saturday, from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. in Ann Arbor, Michigan. If you guys could help out with posts on the Twitters linking back to the Facebook RSVP page, I can link to it in the show notes. That would be awesome. I would really appreciate it. Just in the off chance that you may know somebody, or you might have somebody who follows you who is in the Southeast Michigan area who doesn't know about this yet. It's really kind of falling on my shoulders to get the word out, being the Ann Arbor guy from Kids Read Comics. And so I'm trying to use what little social media leverage I have to crowdsource the imperative to get kids and adults to turn out for this event. So I appreciate that in advance. Okay, so I'll be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. And until then, remember, everybody.
As you saw in today's story, people can change.
Right, Tila. Sibylline had always been an evil sorceress, but she was able to change her ways for the better. Maybe there's something about yourself that you don't like. A bad habit, maybe.
It's easy to say I can't change, but the truth is you can change almost any behavior if you really want to.
And the first step is saying to yourself, I can't.